Dave Reske, and welcome to this edition of In the Now, where we focus on uncovering the myths and misunderstandings of marketing and leadership with some of the world's most interesting people. And my guest today is Michael Brown, founder and CEO of Endash. Michael, you describe yourself on LinkedIn, at least, as a writer, marketer, and an entrepreneur who loves creating things from scratch. You founded Endash to help brands tell a more compelling, consistent story and to help the world's best freelance writers advance their careers. So you probably wrote that many years ago. Is that still true, or is it changed some?
No, it's held up pretty well. That is, you know, been our mission from the start. We've been tempted to go into other, you know, realms of marketing, but have, you know, been pretty disciplined staying in the content creation realm. So yeah, that has been the mission, and we're glad to say it still applies.
That's great. Yeah. Well, we'll get into some of your background and talk about Endash in a few minutes, but I just want to start by asking you to talk a little bit about content marketing. So obviously Endash is in the content marketing business, and I want you to just think about what's a myth that you think people have about content marketing, and you know, what's the reality in your experience?
Yeah, you know, right now we're seeing a lot of articles and ideas put forward where, you know, content marketing is really, the long play. So paid acquisition is obviously very expensive, and the benefits go away when you stop paying for it. So there's this idea going around that, you know, content is a, you know, the 4 to 5 year play for marketing teams. And that's certainly true. Like, you know, if you create content consistently, you are going to get those SEO benefits long term. But we see a lot of brands, you know, getting, you know, really good results much faster than that. So, you know, this idea that you have to, you know, start on day one and you're not going to see results till year 10. That's not what we're seeing. So I think that's one of the bigger myths that we're seeing dispelled pretty much on a daily basis over here.
Wow. So you can kind of quantify the ROI of investment in content sooner rather than, do you think that's just marketing teams saying, yeah, we want to spend all this money, don't measure us for 4 or 5 years and have the new guy who takes my job 5 years from now down the road be accountable for that? Or what do you think that's all about?
Yeah, I think there's a little bit of that. You don't want to be judged too soon on these results. But I think, you know, lately, you know, we've been seeing a lot of emphasis on, you know, distribution, on, you know, building, you know, various channels to distribute the content. So, I mean, I think as marketers get more familiar and see more success in those areas, that you'll start to see the expectations or the diminished expectations pulled back a little bit and to start to judge some of the results a little bit earlier.
That's cool. That's really cool. Well, so when we talk about content marketing, it feels like not all content's created equal, you know, and your firm obviously helps people put together a wide variety of content. What do you think is most effective? And maybe going back to your schema, like most effective in the short term? And, you know, is there something that's different that's more effective in the long term?
Yeah, I mean, you know, for Endash, it's all about, you know, insights and expertise. So there's a lot of, content agencies or platforms that are really geared towards, hey, we have this keyword, we need to write as much as we can on it, to rank for Google, and that's how we'll win. We're seeing, and it's really been, you know, since the start that, it's about the insights that you offer. So if the writer doesn't know, you know, about the topic, or they're just researching it, you know, themselves, it's probably not going to resonate very well with that target audience. It's a little too basic. So, you know, anything where you can bring in, you know, a writer's firsthand experience in a topic or industry, we see that perform really well, both for us and for our clients. So that's a trend I would expect to see, heightened over the next couple months or next couple of years, I would say.
Yeah. So it's the better quality content that really makes a difference. It's not just the quantity. Is there a quantity versus quality trade-off, or is it always really quality that wins?
No, there is a quantity trade-off. I mean, if you write one really good article per year, that's probably not enough to engage your audience and generate leads and all of that stuff. So there is some quantity to it. You know, we see all kinds of different things. We see, you know, companies that will do, you know, 40 to 50 blogs per month. So I'm publishing almost two per day. Wow. That might be a little bit overkill. It's certainly overkill for most brands, but, you know, anywhere from, you know, 3 to 4 posts, you know, per month. I'm just talking about blog posts. Social's a different animal, email's a different animal, but that seems to be a cadence that, you know, both small and large companies can, you know, adhere to pretty well.
Yeah. It feels like there's one argument for quantity where you think about SEO to get kind of visibility and to feed the rest of your marketing engine, to feed like the email strategy, to feed, you know, your advertising strategy, et cetera. But then, you know, your comment about like insights, it feels like there's a different type of content, or maybe it's just deeper content you want. If you really want to engage your reader and have them really read it and do something positive with it, you know, I guess you got to do both, right?
Yeah, you got to do both. I mean, in my former life, you know, I worked for, I was a content marketing manager for a software testing company, and I knew nothing about software testing. So there was, you know, basically two types of content we would put out. There'd be the stuff that I would put out, which was just, you know, me kind of finding interesting trends to write about. But then there was the other type of content where I would lean on like the experts. So I'd interview, you know, the notable authors and speakers in the space. And as you can imagine, that performed, you know, much better, built a better brand reputation than the stuff that I just kind of came up with, you know, on my own. So the, you know, content marketer as journalist, you know, trend has really taken hold. And you can kind of see that in the way that, you know, some of these successful brands are putting things out.
Yeah, that's really cool. So, you know, creating a lot of content is super challenging. And tell me about the N-Dash story. Like, what problem are you solving and how did you...
So, you know, for N-Dash, there's three primary users. There's content marketers, there's agencies, and there's freelance writers. Before N-Dash, I had been, you know, in every single one of those roles. So I had been, you know, a freelance writer. I had been an in-house content marketing manager, and N-Dash was started as an agency. So, you know, the goal all along was to build something, you know, to build a platform, to build a community, to help these brands find, you know, not just writers willing to do the work, but writers that, you know, had really deep subject matter expertise. So, you know, I started N-Dash, I was a freelance writer, you know, got a, you know, kind of a name for myself in the B2B tech space. Eventually hired a few writers and then, you know, really parlayed, you know, all of that revenue and all of those profits into building the platform. So it was a, you know, a basically a 3-year journey from me just going out on my own as a freelancer to launching a platform. And that's what we've been doing ever since, kind of refining the, you know, the technology, building the community, getting familiar with brands and content marketing operations outside of B2B tech. So now we work with higher education, we work with science and medicine, you know, all kinds of different verticals. So, you know, it's been a kind of a crazy ride, but we're, you know, we're happy to be here and happy to be, you know, solving the same problems that, you know, we started out.
Yeah, that's really cool. Yeah. Well, I want to talk more about N-Dash, the problems that you're solving and how to use it, but take me through that ride. So you're a freelance writer and you start making some money and getting this thing and you funnel it all into this software platform, you know, I don't know, venture capital, personal friends and family, like just take the profits. Like what was your, was that stressful for you kind of getting that off the ground?
Yeah, it was really stressful. And we tried, you know, getting VC, you know, we tried going that route. I think for a while, I thought that was the only way we could do it. Mm-hmm. Or do it in a time frame that was sort of acceptable, you know, to me at the time. But, you know, that we just, you know, every day, it seemed like there were more pressing problems to solve, either on the technology side or the customer side, where, you know, the pitching VCs kind of always took a backseat to it, to the point where we just finally said, hey, this is not for us. Like, look how far we've gotten on our own. Like, let's, you know, let's put that aside and really focus on building it. But yeah, I mean, early on, it was really stressful because we went from, you know, an agency with very predictable client retainers to all of a sudden now we're making money one assignment at a time. And for a lot of those agency clients, like it was quite a transition too, because they were used to, having a project manager. Things were a little bit more traditional in that sense, in that they were working with us in an agency capacity. And all of a sudden we're saying, hey, you still have your same writers, but now they're on this platform and here's how to use it. And here are the tools at your disposal going forward. So, for a lot of them, it made a lot of sense. And they appreciated like the flexibility that it gave them. Others, it was a tougher transition for them, but it was a really, tough transition for us, but I'm glad we did it the way we did.
Yeah. And it's smart that you're focused on serving agencies, maybe who took up some of those relationships, as well as the end customer. And you kind of give your client both options, right? They can do it yourself through the platform, or they can work through an agency. Yep. And that works really well.
Yeah, and we ended up keeping, the like a managed service component to the company. So for companies that really just didn't want, another tool to use, or, corralling, 8 to 10 freelancers on a monthly basis, we do offer managed services for those types of companies, but, we're just using the platform on their behalf, managing the writers through the system. So in that sense, like we're able to kind of stay true to the original mission while, making the clients happy.
Yeah. It sounds like a wild entrepreneurial ride, kind of getting off the ground, getting to where you are now at the other side of that. So, kind of looking back, you and I probably both meet entrepreneurs who say, I got this great idea. All I need to do is get venture capital. I get $10 million. I'll make it happen. What advice do you give to those entrepreneurs who are saying, I got it. The only way to make it happen is through VC.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of great resources out there of people that have built like the service business first and use that to, then go into technology. And that's the best and really only advice I can give is find a service that you can offer and build a, build, if you want to, build a solution that will, automate that. For everybody, that's not always all that easy. For us, it was really beneficial because we were building a platform that we ourselves needed as an agency. So we were using it every day, still continue to use it every day. So, it's not like we built, a payroll platform or, some advanced data analytics thing that we never use. We just build it. This was stuff where, every day the team was coming to me saying, hey, would love to have this workflow. Would love to have this feature. So, being able to use the product and need the product yourself, I think is, a great way to move forward with something like that.
Now, so what's your vision for Endash? Just continued growth? Do you see it as, the platform that you're going to add other services to, or, how do you think about it?
Yeah. I mean, we're kind of in it for the long haul. So going back to like the VC thing, I think early on, for me, there was this expectation that, you would raise funds, we'd double every 6 months, and we'd have a huge exit after 5 years. It's just, it's very rare, and not for everybody. So lately we've kind of embraced the lifestyle, the bootstrapped, component to this. So, we're in it for the long haul. We've seen a lot of competitors already come and go. We're still here, still building. I think in terms of, our focus, I think we're going to continue to focus on written content creation, because I don't see that going anywhere, in terms of, the importance to marketing teams. We have had discussions about, building communities of designers or strategists or, editors and things along those lines, which we, may move forward with. But the focus is always going to be on, helping, great writers and brands that are looking for them.
Yeah, well, there's certainly a need. I just got off a call with a client and we're talking about their blog strategy and putting together an editorial calendar. And so, as a client of yours, we're definitely going to be reaching out and using some of those writers. So, but
yeah, great. Yeah.
Everybody has a need for written content on the web. And so there's definitely a need. Well, I'm sure your role has evolved quite a bit, from founder entrepreneur to now CEO of the company and running it. So how do you kind of view your role now? So what's most important to you now?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of float between all of the different departments. So I spend a lot of time on sales. I spend time on marketing. I spend time on product, even customer support. Like, you know, it won't be uncommon for a user to, you know, put in a ticket and have me respond. So I like staying, you know, involved in all areas of the business. And, you know, some quarters it's more marketing, some quarters it's more product. But, you know, I do a little bit of everything here, and it's kind of the way I like it.
That's great. Is there one area that you kind of like more than others? Do you like sales or product development, or if you had to choose?
Yeah, personally, I like product development. I like, you know, scoping the features, working with engineering to build the prototype. I like testing it, launching it, all the product marketing that kind of goes along with it. And obviously, you know, collecting feedback from users on ways to improve it or figure out what's next. But for me, product is really the most fun because, you know, everything that's on our product roadmap is something that either, a customer has kind of specifically asked for. So it's kind of, it allows me to, you know, focus on both the marketing of the product, but also, you know, learning about our users. You know, it helps with relationship building. So product, I think if I had to pick one area to kind of stay in, that would be it.
Yeah, that's cool. So how did you learn that? I've always found that's product marketing, I think, or product management is an undervalued but super important role in any product company. You know, deciding on pricing and features and competitors. And how did you kind of grow into being good at that?
Well, I mean, I think we had a really specific vision for what the platform, you know, was going to do and what it needed to help our users do. I'm sure I didn't go about it in, you know, a way that any product manager would look at and say, yeah, that was the way to do it. I mean, I wrote it out on paper. I drew a lot of the wireframes on paper. I didn't do a ton of research into, you know, how to best, you know, scope a lot of this stuff. It was just, you know, it was really just kind of, you know, me taking a pass at it and seeing what came from it. So I don't read much about, you know, product development. I really just talk to the users. So, I mean, there are other platforms that I like that we borrow from, which I think is a good strategy. So, you know, things like, you know, onboarding flows or, you know, workflows or notifications, like all the nitty gritty stuff. Like there's, you know, you probably use 10 to 15 platforms per day that you can borrow some of those things for. So not a lot of it is like, you know, super original in terms of like, you know, like some of the look and feel of some of it. So, you know, we're just kind of, you know, piecing it together, but doing it for the user. So that ends up, you know, resulting in something good for everybody.
Yeah, that's really cool. Yeah. And how do you feel about the kind of the tension between kind of looking at what your competitors are doing, kind of chasing your competitors and figuring out what they're doing, adding the new feature that they've got versus talking to your customers and understanding the features that they're using and actually asking for? Seems like as you're building your product organically, those might be in tension. How do you kind of think about it?
Yeah, we were really, you know, we watched our competitors very closely to start. And we did make the mistake of trying to, you know, build a lot of what our competitors had. But what we found is that, you know, a lot of those features just kind of went unused. And the ones that they really wanted, our competitors might not necessarily have had. So it's been a while since I looked at any of the other platforms to kind of see what they're doing. I mean, we keep an eye on some of the launches and things like that. But you know, it's not like we're going in there and making a list of features that we need to recreate for ourselves. It's really just based on user feedback and our own internal insights and analytics to kind of figure out, you know, how to get people further along that funnel.
Yeah. Well, you've been very successful at it and built a great product and platform. So it's you've done a really nice job with that. You know, one of the things we've been thinking about here at NowSpeed a lot is how we're changing the world. And so we're, as an agency, you know, doing marketing, you know, does marketing really change the world? And so we've kind of thought about like changing the world through the work of our clients. How do you think about changing the world? Is it the work of NDASH to change the world? Do you think about changing the world just through, you know, your family, or do you think about philanthropic causes? How do you kind of think about your impact here on this planet?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, in our space, the gig economy has kind of gotten a bad rap. And a lot of that is deserved. So, you know, if you did like a word association with gig economy, people would think of, you know, food delivery or, you know, drivers or Mechanical Turk, like really low paying types of roles. And I think for NDASH, you know, we want to show that there's a, you know, there's more upside to the gig economy than you may have, you know, been led to believe. You know, so for us, it's getting writers, you know, more money, better rates, like legit clients, like that's kind of how we're going about doing that. And for us, you know, it's great because every time we win, it means, you know, a writer's just gotten paid for an assignment, or they've just got a new client that they hadn't had before. So it's a pretty rewarding, you know, type of business. And I think that's, you know, if I had to say, you know, how are we making the world a better place? Like we're, you know, helping to put food on the table for a lot of these writers and their families. And I think that's the most we can expect to do, I think.
Yeah, well, that's really cool. You're enabling like lifestyles for all these, you know, hundreds or thousands of people in a big way that lets them live the life and use the skills that they've got in the most productive way possible. That's a pretty that's a pretty cool mission. Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah.
Yeah. So if people want to get in touch with you, use the product, how would they connect with you?
Yep. They can just email me. It's mike@ndash.com. And if they want to sign up or learn more about the platform or service, just ndash.com. That's NDASH, not the actual dash. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And happy to chat with whoever's, you know, looking to kind of build a better remote writing team.
Yeah, that's great. Well, this has been a really good conversation. I kind of anticipated the content marketing side, but you've had such an entrepreneurial journey that was really good to hear a lot of what you've gone through. So thanks for sharing all that.
Yeah, no problem at all. Happy to chat.
All right. Enjoy your time today. Take care.
All right. Thank you.